What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Geno Time Podcast here on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. We are brought to you by Bet Online. My name is Tom Westerholm, Celtics beat writer for Mass Live. I am joined by Nicole Yang of the Boston Globe. Nicole, how are you doing?
Pretty good, Tom. How are you? Managed to stay awake, you know, through all of player availability, even Jason Tatum.
Yeah, I got a text from Nicole at about 11:30 that was like, I'm setting an alarm for 12:15. So here we are, recording after the Miami Heat defeated the Boston Celtics 112-109 in Game 4. Miami goes up 3-1 in the series. Really just, I thought, up and down the roster, a lot of failings on the Boston Celtics here in Game 4.
So the final score was 112-109, but it did not feel that close. I think if they did win, if they did pull off this comeback, there's no way the Heat win the series. I think it's the Celtics series for sure. The result, I feel like, is not reflective of how lopsided the play was. And the Heat didn't even play that well. The Celtics were
so bad
for the Celtics to be heading into halftime down 6. Like Brad said it after the game, we were so fortunate to be in that position. And they were. Like, the team finished with 19 turnovers, 7 of which came in the fourth quarter, which that honestly is the really unacceptable part, is like once you sort of get yourself back into the game and still in the fourth quarter, you turn the ball over 7 times. Like, if we're talking about like who deserves to win, and I'm shocked Brad didn't bring out that line tonight that he always likes to say, like, they deserved it. I mean, it was not a good showing. Like, Jason Tatum was scoreless in the first half, a rough offensive night from Marcus Smart. 19 turnovers, though, ultimately is the key stat, in my opinion. Like, how do you expect to win a game if you're turning the ball over 19 times?
It really is, like, the story of the game.
Pretty sure the Heat turned the ball over, at least when there was 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter, the Heat had turned the ball over once in the second half.
The only two players on Miami's team who had more than one turnover were Bam Adebayo. Adebayo had 3 turnovers, and then Goran Dragic, like, the primary ball handler, had 2. Meanwhile, the Celtics, 6 for Jason Tatum, 4 for Marcus Smart, 4 for Jaylen Brown. I don't know how many of those were live ball turnovers, but a lot of them were. Like, there were a lot of, you know, handing the Heat runouts and that kind of thing. I thought there were 4 stats that really sort of defined the game. First one is the 19 turnovers, more specifically the 19-8. You're just going to have such a hard time winning unless you just absolutely shoot the lights out, which the Celtics did not do. They were 47% from the field, 35% free, 81% from the line on 21 attempts. Like, that's fine. But like, in a 3-point game where you turn the ball over 19 times to 8, you're going to lose 100% of the time, I feel like. Number 2 was Marcus Smart, 1-for-8 from 3. I think that he often takes the flack when the team struggles because it's easy to blame sort of the unconventional guy. But like, tonight, Smart was just hoisting stuff. And like, I understand that to an extent, like, Tatum wasn't shooting in the first half, so somebody was going to have to take some shots. Like, I get that there was some of that. But I thought Smart took some really bad ones. There was 1-3 in the second half that I just was like, I don't. Like, it barely hit the rim. It hit the backboard. Like, it was just a brutal shot.
Well, yeah, when the bad shots persist, like you said, I get it in the first half. I get you trying to get into your offensive rhythm. Like, that's understandable. But in the second half, so Tatum goes 0-for-6, misses his first shot of the second half. So then he starts 0-for-7, but finishes 10-for-15 and makes like very clutch shots that sort of keep the Celtics around, makes 4 3-pointers in the second half. I think that's the thing with Marcus, is you give him the benefit of the doubt if he's feeling it. But if you're 1-for-8 or if you're whatever you're shooting, you just got to feed Tatum, I think, in these moments.
For sure. Or like, you know, I mean, just don't be hoisting threes. Like, the other thing that people don't talk about with Marcus is that he's gotten really good at floaters. He's gotten really good at, like, you know, posting smaller guys up. Like, if you ever got Dragic on a switch, you know, go ahead and try to exploit that. Maybe get a couple of buckets around the rim. Like, 1-for-8 from 3, you can't do that. He and Kemba took the same amount of threes. You know, Tatum took the most because he had 11. But, like, I thought 1-for-8 from 3 for Smart was really telling. And then, obviously, I think the Tatum stat that you mentioned before is another one. And then I think the big one is Tyler Hero having 37 points on 21 shots. Just an otherworldly performance from, like, a 20-year-old rookie. The Heat were able to hold the Celtics off because Tyler Hero was hitting crazy shots. Like, he hit like a couple of step back threes, one on Smart. And he just got into such a rhythm.
Yeah, I mean, he was amazing tonight for sure. And tonight was by far his best performance. But I feel like he's been showing this throughout the bubble. Like, tonight, for sure, the night where he really went off. But like, I mean, he went on that little run in the second quarter, I think, of Game 3, or like in the first half of Game 3, that really kept the Heat around. The funny part, though, about his stat line is that he scored 37 points on 21 shots, which is incredibly efficient, 5 of 10 from 3, but he finished a minus 4 for individual plus minus, which just goes to show how much that stat really is not necessarily the most representative sometimes.
It did not fully capture what was going on. Let's take a quick look at some of the players. Obviously, we touched on Tatum, but let's start with him. Brutal start to the game. Exploded in the second half, 10 for 15. You know, I certainly don't think that, like, having a bad first half in, like, a game 4 meant that, like, he's not ready for prime time. But, like, I do think that, like, the first half was really, really damaging. Like, the Celtics don't come back into the game in the second half without him. But also, like, I mean, come on. Like, if you can go 2 for 7 in the first half instead of, like, 0 for 7, it's like it just would feel like a different game. Not only would the, you know, the 6-point deficit at halftime probably be a little lower, Boston's offense just would have felt more feasible. Like, they would have looked a little bit more coherent in a way that I didn't think they looked.
The broadcast commentary got a little out of hand because they were all of a sudden like, oh, Jason injured? Like, what's going on with Tatum? Like, is everything okay? Like, maybe he's nursing something. And it's like, the guy's just cold. And I guess that speaks to sort of the expectations that are on Tatum now, which is that he's expected to be the guy, like, from the get-go. Clearly it wasn't going well because we're at the point where the broadcast was literally wondering if he was injured. And I'm pretty sure Rachel Nichols asked Brad during his sideline interview, like, everything okay there or something? And Brad was like, yes.
Rachel, like, asked Brad, like, you know, is there any injury or anything? And Brad was just like, not that I've been told about. To me, the biggest thing that, like, the biggest criticism of Tatum was, like, you've got to keep shooting. Like, I just thought he, like, kind of gave up on the first half. And, like, I understand, like, you know, wanting to get to the locker room and sort of regroup and come out for the second half. But, like, it looked like he just, like, stopped trying to even score. And, like, you can't do that, even if you're missing. I mean, early in the second half, he hadn't started going yet. And I was starting to think to myself, like, look, the Celtics have to get him going, because, like, they were going to lose if he didn't get going. Like, you might as well, like, try to do it. If Tatum doesn't start scoring, the game is over. So try to get him scoring now, because, like, what other choice do you have?
And I also think Jason Tatum is the guy on the Celtics where if he's taking a high volume of shots, you're okay with that, even if he's missing, because that's the guy you want doing that.
No, for sure. Marcus Smart, 3 for 12 from the floor, 1 for 8 from three. We talked about that. You know, 1 for 4, to your point about, you know, first versus second half. He was 1 for 4 in the first half from three. His 1-3 was on a offensive rebound by Tice. 0 for 4 in the second. Just continued hoisting them. That was bad. He did have 11 assists. I thought that he was one of the players who attacked Miami's zone and looked to pass, which was good. But overall, disastrous performance by him in just, like, the worst possible game to have a disastrous performance. I thought, you know, the worst type of game for him to just keep shooting, you know, keep trying to shoot himself into it. Jason Tatum needed to have a little bit of Marcus Smart's energy in the first half.
I mean, they all had bad turnovers, but he also had 4 turnovers. It's just inexcusable. Like, I just keep coming back to the turnovers. It just, you can't expect to win when you turn the ball over that often.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Kemba Walker, 20 points, 6 for 14 shooting. I thought, you know, he wasn't perfect by any means, but I thought he played hard. The biggest problem with Kemba was that he was on Hero when Hero started to cook. The Heat kind of went Kemba hunting for a little bit. But just in general, I mean, I thought Kemba brought good energy. Like, he tried. He had, you know, 20 points, 5 assists, 4 rebounds, you know, 3 for 8 from 3. Like, he was fine. Kemba played pretty hard, but I just kind of thought that he was sort of a non-factor almost, which is better than what most of the rest of the team was.
Kemba was the only member of the starting lineup that had no turnovers. Like you said, I think he was sort of a non-factor when it comes to the loss. The one thing I guess that I did notice was that the Heat were definitely looking to take advantage of him defensively. Not only Hero, but whoever was matched up against Kemba, I feel like their first option was not to pass, basically. Like, I think if a Heat player had Kemba defending them, they were a little excited.
It makes sense. He's the one weak link in the Celtics defense, and he's not even a weak link. You know, you would call him, like, the weakest link, I guess. But the guy plays hard. The guy tries. Like, he's, you know, a little bit stronger than you would expect, given his stature. And the way the Celtics defend, too, like, it's pretty easy to force a switch. There was one play where the Heat put Kemba into a pick and roll between Hero and Butler. And I was just like, this is just brutal. Like, whoever he got stuck on in that scenario, it was going to be devastating.
The Heat seeking out Kemba isn't going to be the reason why the Celtics lose. I think that's
not when they turn the ball over 19 times.
I think that's like just something that's going to happen because Kemba is, like you said, the weakest link and he's so short. Like, of course they're going to try and take advantage of that. I mean, you have to do something. So
I guess the last guy that we should probably talk about, Gordon Hayward, you know, played 29 minutes. I didn't think that he was like offensively bad at any point. 14 points, 4-for-9 shooting, you know, relatively efficient, 7 rebounds, 3 assists. You can see how the offense is a little bit cleaner, a little bit smoother when he's in the game. Yeah, I mean, when he was out of the game, the Celtics offense looked a little bit more bogged down. And when he was in the game, everything just kind of clicked a little bit better, even though he wasn't putting up like Tyler Hero numbers.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's not the expectation of him either. So
of course, yeah, for sure.
Totally fine. I guess speaking of Gordon Hayward, then what did you make of the best five lineup? With 6.5 minutes remaining in the fourth quarter, Celtics are down 85-91, and Brad subs Hayward in for Tice, and they sort of try and rock with the best five lineup. It does not go particularly well, in my opinion, but what did you think of the decision to go to that and how they fared?
I guess they had to do it because it worked in game 3. It was successful. Like it proved itself to be successful. And, you know, the Celtics were down 6. So they needed a spark somewhere. They needed to try something. Clearly it did not work. It got shredded. It has gotten shredded before this season. This was not the first time that it got shredded. It felt like sort of a Hail Mary. I understand the rationale behind trying it out, but it clearly, like, I think we kind of have our answer about that group. Like, I really would have thought that that group would be like a Warriors death lineup.
So why isn't it? Like, what do you think is holding them back from being, because like, it's not even like, oh, are they like Warriors death lineup status? It's like, no, this is bad.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even like a positive for the Celtics. So like, why do you think it was not successful this evening? Looking forward, would you turn to it in game 5 if presented a similar situation?
I see. I think I'm done with the best five lineup if I'm Brad. I mean, he subbed Tyson pretty quickly. The Celtics were getting kind of roasted on the offensive glass, especially in the second half. I think part of the reason why the Warriors' death lineup worked so well and why the Celtics doesn't, it is the difference between Draymond Green and Marcus Smart. Prime Draymond Green was a no-questions-asked defensive player of the year. Long-armed, like, versatile, hyper-intelligent monster. Marcus Smart is a monster, but I think this is the difference between him and Draymond. So I would not turn to it again. I would be done with it. In terms of why it didn't work in this game, I do think that some of it was just like, they just made some tough shots. Like, Hero just made some really big boy shots. That's not the only reason that it didn't work, but I think that if you look at tonight, like why it broke down, I think that was part of it. It was just like, sometimes the other team just plays better than you. And that happened for the Celtics in the fourth quarter, I thought.
The first Heat basket after they turned to the best five lineup was that Bam dunk where Kemba got switched.
Right, yeah, exactly.
I feel like that is the perfect example of the lineup getting exposed.
I would agree heartily. I thought that we should just briefly touch again on Miami's zone. I thought the Celtics needed to attack it, just drive at it. Like, I have a hard time blaming Brad for, you know, the loss of this game when there was documented evidence pregame of him telling his guys, drive to the hoop. We're at our best when we drive to the hoop. And then they just like didn't do it for like 2.5 quarters. It's like, and obviously 19 turnovers also, like, it's not like Brad was the one passing the ball to the other team, but like, it's hard to blame Brad when like his game plan clearly worked, because when the Celtics did start driving it into the teeth of the defense, they started getting easy offense. I also thought it was funny. The broadcast was like really praising Eric Spoelstra for sticking with the zone. They were like, some coaches might have come out of it, but Spo, like, you know, stuck to his guns and stayed in the zone. It's like, yeah, dude, because Tyler Hero and Goran Dragic are on the floor, and if he comes out of the zone, the Celtics are going to attack those guys until they're a bloody pulp. Like, of course he was going to stay with the zone. Praising him for, like, sticking with literally the only thing that could possibly work defensively felt like a little bit much to me on that.
Why would you ever stray from something that's working in a playoff game against, like, the Celtics?
Yeah. It was a really bizarre thing to like to go in on. Like, yeah, praise him for like a million other things, but for sticking with the thing that's working, like, yeah.
Also, they've been using this in multiple games now. It's not like something he rolled out, you know, to test out in game 4 and then like stuck with it. It's like, nope, like, we've seen this. This has been like an ongoing issue.
The thing that worked kept working. Like, all right, man, what a brave guy sticking with it.
That's no knock on Eric Spoelstra. That's
not one bit. Again, I think he's the best coach in the NBA. The last kind of note that I had that I wanted to touch on, I'm just curious, like, Do you think like Miami is the better team?
I think the Celtics are the better team. I think Miami has just been playing better. I mean, the Celtics, like, look, game one, they blew their, what was it, a 15-point lead? Game two, they blew a 21-point lead? Game three,
They won.
And then game four, both teams sort of play like meh, but the Celtics play like absolute shit. So it's like, I mean, they don't deserve. I don't think they deserve to be up 3-1. I don't think they deserve for the series to be tied, but I do think that they're the better team. And I do think that they should, at the very least, have the series tied if they were playing up to their, I guess, potential. Through four games, the series is tied points-wise. Both teams have scored 441 points. So I think it shows that like it has been relatively evenly matched, but the Heat are coming up in the more important moments.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, I think like when you just kind of go through the rosters, I just think the Celtics have like the top five players, the top six whatever players in this series. Like I think four of them are Celtics. The Heat are just grinding this out, and I it's really impressive. And they just play really hard. They don't stop. They don't quit.
Well, the thing is, too, is that the Celtics have had a chance to win in every game.
Yeah.
Even tonight, where there was no reason why they should have a chance to win. They did. I mean, just to
add to that real quick, I would say that they've had better chances to win because, like, the Celtics could have won this game, and then were just like, here's the ball.
I guess the concerning thing, too, is that they haven't been able to close in three games now. It's not like it just happened one time and they learned their lesson. It's happened twice from them blowing a lead and then tonight them making the comeback and then unable to finish it off. I don't really know what the explanation there. I don't really know what the criticism there is other than like you have to be better than that.
I think a lot of the Celtics struggles have been that simple. It's the playoffs. You got to be better. Like, you just have to. And maybe this is like a learning experience. Like, you know, I think that there is something to the fact that, like, this is still a young group and they are still learning how to deal with expectations. And I think that, like, as they learn, they will get better. It's not like they've completely coughed up everything. Like, they've had, you know, good moments. This is not like a James Harden just completely loses it in the playoffs situation. This is just like, you know, I think this is just like a team that's learning how to do this and is learning how hard this can be.
I mean, not to sound like Brad Stevens, but you also have to give credit to the Heat here.
Certainly, 100%. That
they actually are executing in the important moments. Tyler Hero going off for 37 points also is, I think, indicative of a problem with the Celtics in that their bench, again, really is so non-existent. You really need your core guys, Tatum, Jalen, Kemba, and I guess Gordon and Marcus. Those two are sort of interchangeable now that Gordon's making his recovery, but you need them all to be able to contribute. And with Tatum just not being able to do anything in the first half, that is going to hurt you. And he knew it. He said it was unacceptable, but it's like,
to your point about the bench, I do wonder if Danny knew how close the Celtics were going to get to the finals. Cause I think even, you know, in February, like when the Celtics were playing like pretty well, I don't think anybody like thought like the Celtics were like probably going to challenge the Bucks, you know, maybe like challenge them, maybe take them to six in the Eastern Conference Finals or something like that. But I don't think anybody thought like the Celtics would be like the Miami Heat away from the NBA Finals. If he had known that they were going to be the Miami Heat away from the NBA Finals, I wonder if he would have pushed a little bit harder, maybe like put Grant Williams and Romeo Langford in a package.
They don't even have a guy on the bench you can rely on for 10 points. Brad Wanamaker.
I would say that Brad Wanamaker scoring 10 points is a luxury, not something you can rely on. Like when that happens, it's like, oh, cool, Brad Wanamaker scored 10 points.
They literally don't have a bench guy that you can count on for 10 points on a given night.
They do, technically, because the bench guy that you rely on for 10 points is either Smart or Hayward. But you can't rely on Daniel Tice for 10 points, and Daniel Tice is the starter. So, like, they really don't. Like, their depth is just a real problem.
It's been surprising to me in the past two series how Brad still continues to go 9 or 10 deep, whereas the opponent is going like 7 or 8. Like in the Toronto series, Nick Nurse basically played the same five guys for all of the second half. In this series tonight, Eric Spoelstra only played like 7 guys. I mean, Solomon Hill got 4 random minutes, but really stuck to his 7 guys. And I'm wondering now that the Celtics have been pushed to the brink, whether Brad will be able to stick to a shorter rotation. because of how weak their bench is, you would think that the Celtics would be the ones playing only like 7 or 8 guys, and Brad has yet to do that.
Looking forward to game 5. I don't totally know like what adjustments the Celtics should make. I mean,
just, you know, maybe try and take care of the ball.
Just don't turn the ball over. Drive and don't screw up so much. Like, I really think that's what it is. Like, and I know how like reductionist that sounds. Like, it's just, it's not like a very interesting take, but it's like, I think that's kind of what it comes down to.
Do you think the Celtics will win game 5?
I don't know. I really don't know. I don't think they're going to win the series. I don't think they're going to win the series.
But I literally can't decide whether I think they're going to win game 5. Like, if I had to make a decision, I don't know what I would say.
I will go with no. I don't think they're going to win game 5. You know, would I be surprised if they won game 5? Like, no. Like, I could easily see them winning game 5. But, like, I don't think they will. Like, because they haven't deserved to win any of the games that they've had so far. Like, again, I think they're the better team. I also don't think any of the 4 games that have been played so far have deserved to go to Boston. So, like, why would that change? Like, we have, like, a 4-game sample size now of the Celtics not deserving to win. So, like, yeah, I guess, like, I don't think they will deserve to win game 5 either. So I predict they will lose.
I think the fact that we are so torn and then ultimately predicting that they will lose is just a testament to Miami of how hard it is to bet against them based on what we've seen. It's just so hard to count them out.
I also think it means that the Celtics are going to win game 5 by like 27 points and then lose game 6. So
awesome.
All right, guys, we will leave it there. Thank you all for listening. And we will talk to you all after game 5.